This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am so happy I'm here in the studio of Tantalk Radio Network. Wow, this is exciting. It is the fourth anniversary of Joy on Paper. It has been an amazing, amazing time. I can't believe how many wonderful, wonderful writers I have spoken to during the past 4 years. So many of the people that I have been reading for years, and I never even imagined that I would get to talk to them, let alone interview them, and actually meet many of them. I was just up in meeting with Margaret George, who is one of my favorite authors and New York Times bestselling author, whose recent two books are about Nero. And it was such a thrill to have lunch with her and just to sit and talk about books. And that's a wonderful thing about authors. They always love to talk about books. So you never are lost for a subject. So whether they're talking about their own books or trying to help other authors. And that's a wonderful thing I have discovered about authors. I always, you know, when you're out of, I had not been in the business, I had not been in the book business. I'd just been a reader all of my life, and I read over 10,000 books. And then when I started the program, I started to learn about authors and how they think and what the problems they face in promoting their books, and the joy of both the writing part, the selling part is not always so joyous. It's difficult. But I learned so much. And one of the things I learned is that they are very, very generous in their in just giving help to newcomers. And I was so very happy to talk to Margaret George about a new author. Her name is Brooke Allen, and she has written a book about Mark Antony, and we are going to be talking. I'm inviting her on the program. I almost finished the book because I've been so busy, but as soon as I finish the book, I'm going to have her on the program, and we will be talking about her new book. But meanwhile, I'm waiting for a call in from Wyoming, from two of my very favorite authors. They've been on before, and Andrew Grant and Tasha Alexander. They are a husband and wife writing team. They don't write books together, but they certainly are both wonderful, wonderful authors, and it's exciting that I'm going to have them on the program with me today. But first, I want to just run through a few things. Irene Goodman was my very first guest. She is a wonderful literary agent in New York City, one of the top literary agents, and I wanted her on the program today. Unfortunately, she has laryngitis because, you know, it's cold up north. We forget. I just went up in Madison, Wisconsin. It was the first time I had seen snow for a long time and a couple of decades, and so it was actually shocking to the system. I needed to buy a pair of boots, and I'm going around here in Clearwater, St. Petersburg area trying to find boots, and I couldn't find any boots. Finally, I landed up in Madison, Wisconsin. My son rushed me over to Target, and luckily, in the hopeful nature that people in Wisconsin have, they put the winter boots on sale, and I got this beautiful pair of boots for $10. So it was really, really lots of fun. But I didn't really appreciate snow. I'm not the kind who can take that cold weather anymore, although I do come from the Upper Peninsula, where my brother and my sister-in-law live and thrive because they love, my brother is not happy unless he has 200 inches of snow. And I think he had that this year. And it's not over because you can still have a blizzard at the end of March. And I know that because I was born in a blizzard at the end of March. And the doctor came in on No, he had to come in, and he stayed there with his snowshoes and those snowshoe things, and he stayed for 2 days because it was a bad blizzard. So I know there's global warming, global cooling, and you never know what's going to hit you. So anyway, it was lots of fun, and his name was Dr. Winkler, and he was a wonderful guy. But I also want to thank today, Irene for being my first guest. She was wonderful. I also want to thank Bill Larson. He's our legal eagle. He comes in once a month. He is from Larson & Larson. A wonderful, wonderful, really a top-rated law firm, not just here in Florida, but also around the country. He's well-known as really an expert in intellectual property. And all authors, please, please be careful with where you put your intellectual property. You must do everything right, because the worst thing is that someone will steal it, or that some disaster will befall you. And you want always to be prepared, so that if you move on with a book, maybe to a film, to a stage play, whatever, you have everything protected. And so Bill is a wonderful lawyer. He will answer your questions. All you have to do is go to my website, which is www.radio-joyonpaper.com. I have a form right there on the front page. Put in your question for him, and he will answer it when he comes on the program. He's also my patent lawyer, and I want to tell everyone, if you have an idea for a patent, he's gotten me four patents. His law firm has gotten me four patents, and they are just a wonderful group to work with. Do not send your patent ideas to somebody that you see on television. That is a bad, bad idea. You need to first meet with a patent lawyer and make sure that you protect yourself. And that's the same for all of you writers out there. Please do not send your intellectual property by email to people in Hollywood who promise to get it in front of a Hollywood producer. It is not going to happen. And you will, you really are taking a chance. And so please, please don't do that. Then I also need to thank a few very, very important people who have really helped me so much. Glenn Erickson, I thank you so much, Glenn, for your support of Joy on Paper. Glenn not just supports Joy on Paper, he supports all of you authors out there. He wants you to be successful, and so he always has great suggestions, and we run his little promos for different organizations. So please make sure that if you meet him at some of the writers' meetings, to thank him for supporting Joy on Paper. And, of course, I have to thank Rita Moreau, because Rita Moreau is our radio Rita. She does the book buzzes, and she has so much fun doing them, and I have so much fun. I'm not calling her one-take Rita, because she can just pop in here and sit down and start buzzing away. And she loves reading, and she's also a great author. And I'm so proud to have her as part of Joy on Paper. I also want to thank Jim Lamb. Jim Lamb has just been so, so helpful to me. He's always got great suggestions. He's always got ideas for me, and I appreciate it. And I just want to thank him so much for being, he's done press releases for me. He's just been very generous with his time and energy. And I thank Jim Lamb for that. He's also a wonderful writer and a poet. And I'm going to be playing more of his poetry over the next few months. I've got somebody now who will record them, and we will be playing some of Jim Lamb's poetry. And I also want to thank, of course, my sister Natalie, who is the connoisseur of cozy mysteries. It's very funny. If your book gets past my sister, then you know you have a winner on your hands, because she is very particular about her cozy mysteries. So I want to thank her, and she helps me read the books. She will recommend them, authors that she discovers, and I'm always very happy with her suggestions. And then, of course, I want to thank the three joys of my life, my husband and my boys. Because of them, I started the program, and because of them, I find the joy of being able to help people with this program. And I do everything I can to help promote authors, not just the famous authors. It's always fun, of course, for me to talk to the best-selling authors, not just the New York Times best-selling authors, worldwide best-selling authors like David Baldacci and Mary Higgins Clark. But I also want to help indie authors, authors just starting out, whether they're doing picture books or young adult fiction, or, you know, just trying to break into general fiction. It is so much fun for me to read their books. And when I bring somebody on, it's because I have found something special in their book, something that I really enjoy. And I now have on my webpage, on the front page, I have a new category. It's called Patsy's Picks for Flicks. And as all of you know, I was a screenwriter. And so I have a very good eye for a book that would make a great film. And I am putting up my recommendations in the hope that somebody from Hollywood will be looking at this list. I am going to be doing some advertising in various little Hollywood journals so that I can attract attention to my picks, because it is so important. Sometimes, you know, it is difficult. I know so many of you would see that you would love to do something in Hollywood. It's almost impossible for someone who has no connections to get into Hollywood. It is basically a place where you have to be connected. Now, I have limited connections from the old days, but I do know some people, and some people know me. And so I want to see if I can help any of you get noticed by somebody in Hollywood. And so that's Patsy's Picks for Flicks. And I will let you know if I put your book up there, and I will be changing them every once in a while, because there is a lot of money out there now with all the various companies doing all the streaming videos. They are looking for good products, and I think many of the authors who have been on this program certainly qualify. So anyway, that's another thing to do. And remember, if you have a suggestion for an author that you want me to interview, just send me an email at patsy.radio@gmail.com, and I will invite them. Many of the guests that come on my program have been recommended by you listeners out there who have sent me emails or connected with me on Facebook, which, by the way, if you please go to Facebook, Joy on Paper, and like me, because it helps. All of this helps with trying to find more sponsors, because I just enjoy this program so much. I have so much fun talking to all of you. And, of course, it was so much fun back in the fall when we had VoucherCon here in Florida. I was so thrilled. There were so many wonderful authors that I got to meet, of course, who have been on my program. But I think the most exciting thing was meeting so many wonderful, I think there were almost 1,200 readers. And for me to meet fellow readers and enthusiastic readers was really a real joy. And I always am happy to hear from all of you, and with your suggestions, both for topics and for authors that you want me to invite. So I'm really looking forward to getting some more emails from you, because I am busy trying to fill up my schedule. I have so many requests. I have, it's funny, I have David Baldacci this week, and in April, he's coming out with another book. So I just, it's constant. Working on my calendar to fit everybody in, and I hope that you will send me an email. And of course, I have to stop for a moment and thank Big Ed in the control room. He's so wonderful and always very, very helpful and kind. So thank you, Big Ed. And wow, hi, who do I have on the phone? Is it Andrew? Or Tasha?
It is.
And Tasha.
Okay.
We're both here.
Okay. This is so exciting. I was just talking a few minutes about VoucherCon, and it was so much fun to meet both of you here. And, you know, the dynamics of BoucherCon, because it was my first one, you know, this is the fourth anniversary of my program. And what I knew nothing about the business when I got into it. I knew nothing about publishing or book, you know, promotions or authors. I knew no authors. And it's really, I'm still sort of in shock that I've interviewed so many famous authors. And with BoucherCon, it was wonderful that I got to meet so many people. And not just the authors, all of you were just great, but to meet so many fans who were so enthusiastic. And now I have to tell you both, when I saw you there, I thought, oh, you are both so delightful. And I got on both of your interviews that I had, well, two with Tasha and one with you, Drew, I had such nice response. And I have to tell you, Drew, we talked about your school.
We did. Yeah.
It was so funny. I mean, before I got off the air, somebody sent me an email. They got such a kick out of me calling you an old Albanian. They thought that was so funny. And one of, you know, this program attracts many mystery writers. And so woman sent me an email, and then she sent it at 11:55 before I even got up there. And she said, "Now, do you think he'd mind if I do open my book with a scene where a man comes staggering in Mall of America? He falls down. There's a knife in his back, and his last words are, 'The old Albanian did it.'" And then for the rest of the book, the Minnesota police are rounding up every old Albanian. I said, I think that's a...
I think it's a brilliant idea. She should definitely do that.
I said, that's because they could round up, you know, there have to be a bunch of Albanian immigrants up there, and they'll be rounding up all these old... None of them will know anything about St. Albans. They'll never think about it. Right?
No, that would be brilliant.
Isn't?
That's definitely the way to go. I love that idea.
I thought that was so clever. I said, well, that's nice. I really like that. I have such smart listeners out there. And so thinking of that, I decided I'm not going to ask you any questions today. I'm going to... you're just going to sit around there. I decided to open it up.
You're not going to make a thing, are you?
Well, I decided to ask my listeners for questions for you, because I will make my job easier. And seeing that they are so clever, I thought, okay, let's see what I... So I sent out a newsletter. I said, what questions would you have for Tasha and Drew? And there are lots of some really, really great ones. And so I'm going to share them with you. The one that was the most popular was, where did you meet and was it love at first sight?
Well, actually, it really was. So we met at a BoucherCon. We met at BoucherCon in Baltimore.
Oh,
in 2008. Yeah, in 2008. And it was the night before the conference started, but both of us had come early. And in fact, funnily enough, I had changed my ticket the day before because I wasn't going to come for another day. And one of my friends talked me into coming early. And so I was, as people frequently are at BoucherCon, I was in the hotel bar with a group of my friends, and we were just hanging out and catching up because, you know, we hadn't seen each other in a long time. And all of a sudden, this tall, handsome, cool drink of water walks into the bar. And it's so not like me to go pick someone up in a bar, but I went over and introduced myself. And I would say what we talked, that was relatively early in the evening. We stayed up in the hotel lobby till, 2 in the morning or something that first night?
Yeah.
And that was it. We were just done and dusted, madly in love.
I'd been for dinner the night before with my brother, that night with my brother. And after dinner, he wanted to go outside for a cigarette. So I thought, you know, my first book wasn't even out yet, and I'd been told I had to start coming to these things and starting to meet people and, you know, make contacts and get my name out there. But it was really uncomfortable for me because I was still living in England at the time, and, you know, we just don't have a culture where you go up to people and say, "Hi, let me tell you about me." You know, so I was really not looking forward to it. So I thought, I can't, you know, he went outside, so I thought, I can't put this off any longer. So I came to the door of the bar, and it's this huge rectangular room with the actual bar down the left-hand side, then kind of round tables in the middle, and then booths at the right-hand side. And it was full of people, so I thought, okay, what I'll do is I'll push my way to the far end of the bar and then work my way back. And then even if I want to leave, I've at least got to say excuse me or, you know, something to somebody, so it'll get the ice broken. But then I took one step into the bar, and I saw Tasha standing at one of these round tables with some friends, and I just thought, okay, the plan has changed. I need to talk to her, but how am I going to do that? So I thought, you know, we're English, I haven't been introduced. So I thought, well, I'll go to the bar, and I'll buy a drink, and while I'm waiting for it to come, I'll think of something. But the bartender was the fastest bartender in the world. And before I had a chance to even think of anything, the drink was in my hand. So I thought, oh, no, I'm doomed. What am I going to do now? And I looked around, and she was coming over to talk to me. So it all worked out perfectly.
And being as modest as he is, he would never believe that I would have liked him first. But I can prove that I did, because I actually spoke to him first. And I didn't even know he had the accent yet.
Oh, wow.
What a bonus.
What a bonus. Okay, well, that sort of reminds me of how I met my husband. He walked into my office. I took one look at him. It was raining outside, an icy rain. He walked in. He stood under the fluorescent light, and it was like a halo around him. And I took one look at him. I fell in love, and that was it. Instantly. So, you know, people say sometimes, well, you read in the books that they fell in love instantly. It can't happen. But it does, isn't it amazing?
Absolutely.
Now
it sounds like your wedding had an interesting
story. Oh yeah, we're gonna have to meet at a bar, and I'll tell you all about that. that was lots of fun. Now I have some questions for Drew. Thank you for letting me call you Drew, because I don't know, that was a name that I just loved when I was a young girl. I decided I'm gonna call you Drew. Well, this one is for you. Again, remember, my listeners and are so often into mysteries, and they're very observant people. And I posted a picture that I had taken with you at BoucherCon, and I never noticed this. But one of the fans who was at BoucherCon wrote in and said, "What was that watch that Andrew Grant was wearing? That's a beautiful watch." And I hadn't noticed it, but what was that watch?
Well, let me have a think.
It's a rectangular one.
It's a square one, yes. Yeah. Well, that watch, that is the watch that Tasha bought me as a wedding present. And it's a very special one. It's a Tag Heuer. And it was it's a reissue of one that came out in 1969, which was made famous when Steve McQueen wore it in that movie Monaco, the motor racing movie. So it's called the Tag Heuer Monaco, and it's beautiful. It's square. It's an automatic watch, so it's mechanical, but you don't wind it. Just, you know, the movement of your wrist winds the watch. And it was the very first automatic watch in the world that had a chronograph built into it, as well as a regular watch. So it's absolutely fabulous. It's got all these lovely technical features, but the truth is, I just think it looks beautiful, and I loved it because of the way it looks. And it's got a beautiful blue face, and it's a really nice shape. I just think it's the most beautiful watch ever.
Well, you see, that's what happens when you have really observant.
Somebody has a good eye.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And now this is a question. What?
Yep.
I have a question for Tasha. Now, this one, again, this is from somebody who was at BoucherCon. And she wrote, and she said, could you please ask Tasha, what face cream does she use? Because she looks 25, and I could not believe that she was older than 25.
Well, I love her, first of all. Thank you. I have long been devoted to Crème de la Mer, which is somewhat outrageously expensive, but I think absolutely worth it. It really is so good for the skin. It was developed by a NASA engineer who had burned himself in like some kind of awful chemical burn in the lab, and developed this cream to try to keep his face from scarring as a result. And I started using it a long, long time ago, and I will never abandon it.
Well, It certainly works, because really everybody said that you look 25. Nobody would believe. I said, no, she's got she's a little bit older than that. But we'll stick. It was funny. People notice these things. Now
people are observant.
Exactly, it's wonderful. Now this one is for both of you. Many of the listeners said, we're comparing you to different famous couples. And now I have to tell you that on my second anniversary, I had a very famous writing couple on, Bill Pronzini and Marcia Mueller. They are Mystery Writer of America Grandmasters. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to have a couple on today. And so I was so excited to have you both on. But several people said we're comparing you to Harriet Vane and Lord Peter Wimsey. And they wanted to know, because, of course, Harriet was an author, and Peter Wimsey was a bit of a sleuthy kind of person, and we all feel that you are, Drew, that you are a sleuthy kind of person, in addition to your writing. But do you have a bunter in your life?
Oh.
Huh?
I wish. I wish we did.
You didn't find a nice, you didn't bring a nice British butler over with you?
No. I mean, we only have Emily's butler, Davis, and unfortunately he lives in my head, so.
Yeah.
I wish we had, when we lived in Chicago, we had both, in our apartment, we had both a maid's room and a butler's pantry, but neither a maid nor a butler, so.
Yeah, we wondered if they'd run off together at some point.
Well,
but I think everyone should have a good bunter.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't it be? Well, maybe that's what we'll land up. Maybe that's what they have to name this robot that they're going to come up with that will take care of everything around the house.
Yeah.
which would be nice, because I know definitely for Tasha and for me, and I'm sure for Andrew, we're always reading, and we don't need all that housework kind of stuff. So.
No.
We do have one of those little robot vacuum cleaners, but what we've found is that it actually doesn't save us any time at all, because it's so much fun watching it going, making its way around the house, sweeping stuff up, that we probably spend just as long watching it do its thing as if we were doing the vacuuming ourselves. So, I think the proper robot is definitely the way to go.
But I hope you can program the accent to be whatever you want.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be nice. Yes, definitely.
I think that's essential.
Oh, yes. I want a British accent. I think that'd be great. Now, we all know that, of course, you both travel a lot. And, Drew, because your books really, one of the people wrote into me, his name is Donald, and he said, how do you, when you travel, what is the most exciting adventure you've had in your travel? The worst hotel, or where you got lost, or something like that, when you were looking, trying to go to a location that you were going to put in your book?
Well, that's a really interesting question. And I think the thing for me, rather than going to a location specifically to put it in a book, I tend to do it the other way around. I tend to travel just because I love traveling. And then later, when I'm thinking about a story, you start off with the characters and you think about what kind of things might happen to them. And then you think, well, what kind of location would you need in order to make that happen? And that's when, you sort of dip into this sort of encyclopedia of memories that you've built up of different places. So I tend to do it that way around. But I think probably if I had to pick a worst hotel, that would be in Albany, New York, when I was there for BoucherCon one year. I screwed up the arrangements, and it was a funny BoucherCon, because instead of it being in one single hotel, the accommodation was spread between five in the middle of the town. But I screwed up my booking, and I didn't get into one of those official five. So I ended up in one that I like to say is a little bit like the Bates Motel, but without the feeling of safety and security. And I was literally wedging a chair under the door handle before I went to sleep at night. It was really bad. So that was the worst hotel. And I think the other than that, I think a memory that really sticks with me is that one year Tasha and I were lucky enough to be invited to go to Morocco as part of a cultural delegation. And when we got over there, we were going to get flown from Casablanca to a tiny little town called Tantan down in the Eastern Sahara, Western Sahara. My geography is terrible. And so
I don't want to start an international incident.
Well, you might do that anyway. So we go to this part of the Sahara, and the thing is, we really hate checking luggage because, you know, you have so many mishaps with that. So on this occasion, we had to because they didn't want their guests to be carrying their own luggage. So we checked our luggage, and they said that it would be delivered to this special camp that had been set up in the middle of the Sahara that we were staying in. They promised us it would all be fine and that the luggage would be waiting for us at our tent when we got there. So Tasha and I generally have this thing that, you know, you have that horrible feeling when you're about to leave home that you've forgotten something. And we always say, well, as long as you've got your passport and your credit card, everything will be fine. Except that we go to the Sahara Desert, which is probably the only place in the world where having your passport and a credit card is absolutely no use to you. And, of course, we got to the tent, and there's one suitcase sitting outside instead of two, and it wasn't mine. So I had the whole time we were in the Sahara Desert with only the clothes I was wearing on the flight over. So that was quite an interesting experience.
Oh, that, yeah.
Well, that was very interesting because it really teaches you that you actually don't need half of that stuff that you carry around with you.
And his suitcase had a little adventure all across Europe when it finally made its way. It never arrived to us in Morocco, although the irony of it was that in the end it turned out it had been in the camp the entire time.
Yeah, just lost in the camp. And when they found it, they returned it to us in Chicago, and they sent us the tracking information. And it had this wonderful adventure. It went to various different places in Morocco. Then it went to Paris. Then it went to Leipzig. Then it went to somewhere else in France. Then it went to Cincinnati. Then it went around two or three different cities in the States. And it finally arrived in our building in Chicago. A little bit worse for wear, but, you know, in one piece.
A well-traveled suitcase.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
But that was an amazing trip because, you know, we, being part of a cultural delegation, we got to meet the crown prince. We were taking part in a Bedouin festival. Well, we were observing the Bedouin festival. So there you are out in the middle of the Sahara Desert in this unbelievable camp, staying in tents, never walked on the sand because they had just stunning oriental carpets everywhere. So you never got sand in your shoes.
No.
So, Drew, you didn't play polo on a camel?
Well, I was I really wanted to ride on a camel, but unfortunately, the only people that were allowed to do that were the really good camel riders. There was one guy he was some sort of local legend. He was like a kind of retired celebrity, and he was there on his camel, sort of sprawling back, and all these local kids were swarming around him. It was fantastic to see.
Now, I had an interesting question here from a couple, Mark and Kathy, and they say, if you knew that you were going to land up on a desert island, what would the one novel that you could both agree on to bring?
Ooh, we have to share one book?
One book. And Mark said he wants Moby Dick. And as a matter of fact, he keeps that book in his, he sails, and he has that book in his sailboat. Kathy.
That's prepared.
Yes. And that sort of scared Kathy when she heard that it was, that was the goal. That was the reason he had it. And she wanted Gone with the Wind. And so, okay. What would you two of you agree on?
One book. First of all, even if it wasn't agreeing, it would be hard to pick one book. I mean, there is one book. I don't think it's probably not long enough to have on a desert island, but we did both take, well, we had one topic, but we shared it when we were going on vacation years ago to Jamaica, Steve Healy's How I Became a Famous Novelist. And I was sitting on the beach reading it, and it's so funny that I kept reading it out loud to Andrew. And I tore through the book, read it that day. Next day, gave it to him. He read it and read half of it out loud to me. So we both really love it, but I'm not sure it would keep you going for that long on a desert island because it's short.
Yeah,
it's a fantastic book, though. I can't understand how it wasn't just the most wildly successful. It's so funny and so well written.
All about the publishing industry. But yeah, one book. What would we do?
That'd be tough. Unless we could cheat and have like one encyclopedia or something.
No, no, novel. That's why they.
That's more than one volume.
They say a novel, so it's one that you'd read. You'd have to be able to read over and over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think? Maybe War and Peace or something.
War and Peace. I adore War and Peace, and that book has everything in it. That, love, war, peace.
Yeah.
It's such a fascinating cultural study and amazing characters. Yeah, I would absolutely say War and Peace.
Yeah, that's probably the way to go. Yeah.
Probably, because you have Napoleon in there, too, and that's fun always to read about Napoleon.
So. That's right. That's right.
I never get tired of reading Napoleon. I have, like, this enormous bookcase full of every book about Napoleon.
Excellent.
So, yeah, that would be...
Yeah, War and Peace could keep me occupied. I mean, when I was researching my book that said on Russia, I think I read 4 different translations of War and Peace. So I never get tired of Tolstoy.
Yeah, I think that would work. That'd work. That's the one I would take, I think, if I didn't take a Bagthorpe. I might, if I was really... have you guys read Bagthorpe? The Bagthorpe books by Helen Cresswell?
No.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
We're going to have to,
You have to read these. And, you know, Drew, this is a British series. This is the funniest series. I can read those over and over and over again. And whenever I need to laugh, I read one of the Bagthorpe series.
I'm going to have to hunt them down today.
you must. They are absolutely fabulous. You laugh out loud, and you just can't help yourself. So yes, absolutely, you have to read those. Now, do you read poetry to each other? That's another question from who's that one? I have to say because this is from a woman who writes poetry and she loves poetry and she's trying to encourage people to read more poetry. So
yeah. I think reading it out loud is a very good idea. What we do tend to do is if I have to go back to England for a period of time, then often if we email each other, we will find excerpts of and email them to each other. But
Didn't I give you a blank book that I had written out poems that I like?
You did very early on.
Yeah, early on.
Yeah.
Because we both love poetry, and I think your listeners absolutely right. People should be reading more poetry. I subscribe to that poem of the day email that comes from, I think, the World Poetry Foundation. And, you know, some of them you're going to like better than others, but it's very nice to just have a poem every day.
Well,
and there are some just such amazing poetry, you know, what poets can do with just a small number of words is extraordinary.
Yeah, I love the economy of it, you know, the efficiency, the amount of emotion that can be evoked with the minimum possible number of words. I just love that.
Yeah.
Now, another question is, what were the two of you like in school? I imagine, Tasha, you must have been teacher's pet all the time, but what were you guys like?
Well, I mean, you know, when I was in grade school, I was very, very good and got very good grades. And then in high school, I got very bored in high school. My high school wasn't what could be described as challenging. And so I didn't have the world's greatest relationship with all of my teachers. But, you know, I was a big geek. I read all the time. And I don't know, I never quite fit into one group of people. So I sort of kind of go between different groups. So I did sort of never have a place. But I had wonderful friends.
Now, of course,
I mean,
Drew, at public school in England, it's a bit different. So what were you like there?
Well, you know, I had, looking back on my school days, I've got so many good memories. But before I got to St. Albans School, we went to what we call junior school in England. So the school that you're at between, I don't know, like 7 and 11, I guess. And I just got into some really bad habits at that school because it turned out that the teachers who worked at that school, they weren't all that keen on teaching. And so they had, and it was in the early 70s, so they had these ideas like they shouldn't mark your work because marking work was elitist, that, you know, because what if you hadn't done very well? You might not feel good.
Oh.
But they just didn't mark anybody's work, which my parents had a really hard time understanding. You know, they'd ask me, well, how did you get on in that test? And I'd say, well, I don't know. So they'd assume that I'd failed and I was trying to disguise the fact. So, you know, there were some blow-ups between my mother and the head teacher when he was refusing to, as far as she saw it, he was refusing to do his job, so she wasn't happy about that. And then I got, the last year I was there, the teacher, he literally did nothing, and he wanted us to just sit and do projects and things, and I just thought, well, if you're not going to mark it, I'm not going to do it. So I just got into the habit of just bringing books to school and sitting sitting with the book under the desk and reading. And in a way, actually looking back on it, that was something that really set me on the path of writing crime fiction, because once I was reading this book, I still love it to this day. It's one of my all-time favorites, that book Watership Down. I don't know if you remember that one.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So I was sitting there, and normally I had quite a good kind of sixth sense, and I could tell if he was about to come out from his desk and come and, you know, stalk around the classroom looking for misdemeanors. Normally I could sense him coming, but I was so sucked into that book that he caught me, and he kind of grabbed the book, and he went on this big rant about, so, you know, you think you're a good reader, do you? And first of all, he was telling me that book was no good, and then he had this very strange thing that he said. He said to me, unless you can pick up any book and read it without thinking, then you're not a good reader. So I thought, well, what's this idea of reading a book and not thinking? What's that all about? But secondly, I thought, okay, well, that sounds like a challenge. So we're going to see about that. So that night I went home and I went up to my father's bookcase and I thought, okay, I've got to just pick any book and read it to prove I'm a good reader. And I thought, you know, by now I'm getting a little nervous. I'm thinking, well, what if the guy's right? What if I can't? What if the book's no good? What if I don't like it? So I picked one at random, and it was a book called Ice Station Zebra by Alastair MacLean. And it just completely blew my mind because, you know, the whole thing about the unreliable narrator, you know, a guy in a book who's lying to you, it was just unbelievable. And, you know, the adventure and the high stakes and the tension, everything was fantastic. I loved it. And to this day, it's one of my favorite books. And Tasha actually found me a first edition hardcover that we have in pride of place on the shelves downstairs. But that was all before St. Albans. St. Albans School was wonderful. I love that place. You know, if you could go back in time, I definitely would do that.
And they had a proper curriculum, which is, you know, I homeschool my boys. And I tried, having lived in England, you know, I mentioned that I had bought this 400-year-old cottage when I was 21 years old, just so I could live near where Jane Austen was born and raised. And so I got into the habit of just English life and enjoying it. And so when I finally came home and got married, well, we'll talk about that. But anyway, my boys were born here in America, and so I just raised them sort of with this idea of learning. I got a Latin tutor for my son at the age of 7, and he was taking the Latin exam by the age of 10 here in the United States, which is unusual. But I figured if all those little boys I was in a village called Sonning near Reading, and all the little boys from Reading School would come down to the sweet shop, which is opposite my house, and they would be talking Latin. And since I had taken Latin in school, they were very surprised that I could understand what they were saying. And they'd say, that American lady, is she knows? Don't talk with the American lady.
I love it. I thought they were being all covert.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and really showing up. You know, there were only three pubs and a sweet shop and a butcher in Sonning. And so they were showing off to, you know, the village people. But they couldn't, you know, they'd say, and after they got to know me, of course, because I had a Cadillac, they really liked me. But it was...
I bet that could have been challenging, fitting that around some of those little country lanes in England.
Oh, yes, it was. It was. It was lots of fun. And so, you know, it's just... I thought it was a great background for school, and I think that's one of the reasons I just loved England from that point of view. I loved the food like at Fort Norman Mason's, Harrods. Did you ever eat in Harrods health foods downstairs in the basement?
No.
Oh, I miss that. I am trying to find somebody who knows the recipe. They had the best. It was not just a fruit salad. It had some other stuff in it. I'm trying to find somebody who actually ate in that health food store. The best in the world. And, you know.
There's got to be some way to get the recipe.
Well, you know, they changed hands there.
These people are not...
quite the same. So I had a very good relationship with many people in Harrods because I actually did some work with them. So but it's funny. I'm just trying to find somebody who can remember that. Which reminds me, Drew, are there any English foods that you miss?
Well, you know,
like Ribena.
A couple of things. I love Ribena. That's one of my favorites, and I always get that when I go back. And that one's harder to find over here. There are other things that I love, like Branston pickle. So, you know, if you're having a cheddar cheese sandwich, if you put in some Branston pickle, that is tremendous. Although we have found a couple of places over here where you can get it.
We have a stash of it in our pantry now.
I like Coleman's English mustard as well. So there are one or two things like that. And the other things, one of my very favorite food is... I love Indian food, and Indian food in England is just slightly different to Indian food here. So I'm a bit of a creature of habit. So anytime I go back to England, the first thing I do is have a big Indian feast.
And nobody in America makes fish and chips. The fish and chips in England, really, you go to any place, the crummiest looking fish and chip shop, it tastes really good, and they put it on the newspaper.
It does. It's true.
Yeah, that's always on the second night is the fish and chips.
Curry night one.
Yeah.
Fish and chips night two.
I've always come back a few pounds heavier than when I left.
But what about you, Tasha? Do you cook some English food?
I do. In fact, you know, I wonder if you've seen this. Fortnum & Mason has some wonderful cookbooks now with traditional English recipes in it. But, you know, I love to make shepherd's pie. Although more often than not, I wind up doing cottage pie instead of shepherd's pie. I never met a bangers and mash I didn't like. And that's so easy to make. Harder to find bangers here because our sausages are very different than English sausages. But, you know, there are a lot of butchers that you can get real bangers from, mail order. They ship them. You know, they're frozen and they FedEx them to you packed in dry ice. Mm.
Well, that just reminds me, actually, the other thing I really miss is English bacon, because that's so different from American bacon. But luckily, Tasha found a place where you can get that mail order, too.
Yeah. People who do the banger.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm running out of time. It's gone so fast. I want to thank my listeners who sent in the questions, and I want to thank you both for joining me today. Both of you mentioned your web pages so people can look them up.
I'm very easy. It's just TashaAlexander.com.
And
mine is AndrewGrantBooks.com. But we just both wanted to say thank you so much.
Yeah.
It's always a pleasure to be on the show, but especially an honor to be on for your anniversary.
Yes.
So thank you so much.
Congratulations.
Well,
it's always such a delight to get to talk to you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
And the questions from the listeners, too. They did a fantastic job with those questions.
They, fabulous. They, really
they,
great.
They really did. And I want to say that, you know, when I meet people, I always sort of think of a book that they remind me of. And you two, when I was watching you at BouchaCon and the way you were looking at each other when things were just happening, different events, you reminded me of, I don't know, have you both read The Professor by Charlotte Bronte?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the two of you, the sweetness, the gentleness, I just thought that was so, it just reminded me of that book. And I had to go back and reread it. And I was, you know, I think that, I don't know if you've read it recently, but that's a book that you probably too should read out loud to each other because it is such a beautiful book. And people,
and I haven't read it in so long. I need to go back to it.
Yeah, I think you should read it together and back and forth because I think it's a romantic book and it's a beautiful book. And it reminds us also there, the love of books, the love of learning and I think the two of you are just so sweet. So, again, I want to thank you for joining me today. It's just been a real joy. And I thank my listeners for sending the questions because I'd probably be crying if I had to I'm a little bit emotional, and as I said, it's just an honor to that I got to meet you, and Pekka got to meet Tasha, and you know, we have that picture up, and Pekka loved you. He's my little bear from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and so
yeah.
it was wonderful, and I really appreciate all your kindness, and I hope to see you at the next BoucherCon, huh?
Absolutely.
We are always looking forward to seeing you.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Thanks again.
Take care.
Thank you again. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye. Whew. Wow. They are wonderful people, wonderful authors. And the Lady Emily series that Tasha writes, it's particularly fun for me because, of course, I've been to so many of these places in England, and I just love the history of England, and she writes about it so, so beautifully and brings it in, and you come out of after reading her books. She's just, you know, a wonderful author who really can lay out a scene and just bring you right in there. And then, of course, I think that Andrew Grant's recent book, Invisible, is one of the most... I love that opening, and there are so many surprises and twists in that book. I love when a book surprises me, and I don't know what's going to happen. And I just... like it's like turning a corner, and you find something new and interesting. And I think one of the best scenes is the basement scene in that book. I don't want to tell you all about it, but it's worth reading because you... it's just the kind of book that you say, okay, wow, I'm glad I read that book. And again, remember, go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com. I will have this interview up. I have a list of their books and a whole story about them. And the photos that I got when I was at BoucherCon with them, they are wonderful. Just kind, and as I said, it was just so much fun to see them interacting with the fans and with each other. They're just lovely people. And again, I want to thank everybody who's just been so wonderful to me over these years, and all of you who have sent me such kind messages. I also have to thank you, Lola, for everything. I really appreciate you, and and appreciate everything, because you know, this is just so much fun for me to help authors, because one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them in an audible book, or if you're very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and to have your book turned into a film, a streaming video, maybe a television series, like I hope will happen to Carol J. Perry, who has written a wonderful, wonderful cozy mystery series, Witch City Mysteries, that would be perfect for Hallmark. And again, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Ed, thank you for everything. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. Bye-bye now. Bye.